Blog Talk Radio.
Let's do this Susie Q. I wanna do this dance. I wanna dance with you. What's your name? They may tell me. Be plain to see. Big question I'm asking, baby, don't you? Don't you wanna dance with me? That dance you call it. Susie Q, come on, come on, come on, babe, come on, let's do a little dance, darling, that I call it Susie Q.
All right, that's enough of that. Welcome, everyone, to Puck Chatter Radio, the official online audio program of thethirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com. I am Chris Block, the writer and creator of and beholder of those sites. It's actually one site, but we won't get into it. On the line tonight, in our triumphant return, from NHL Network Radio, am I that correct? I suppose I should unmute Al Samaglia. Al, how are you doing?
Doing good. Good to be with you.
This is how internet radio is supposed to go, Al.
Well, make the mistakes early.
How you been doing, Al? It's been a long time since we've talked. We were supposed to meet each other or at least have a chat at the United Center on Friday night. I know you attended. I was unable at the last second. But how's your summer been?
Summer's been good and went by quick, like most people would probably say, but was busy for the most part and decompressed a little bit from hockey and now looking to get back into the swing of things.
And I mentioned at the top, NHL Network Radio is your affiliation this year, is it not?
Yes, it is. Not writing for Fox Chicago any longer, and maybe a couple of things coming up during the year, but for now that's it, but you'll be one of the first to know if things change.
All right, excellent. Tonight on the show, of course, we're going to be, it's been a long time since I've done a radio show, or an internet radio show, and the Blackhawks season ended, and now is getting ready to begin, in fact, before, or since I last did one. So we've got a lot to talk about. We're not going to, I don't think we're going to delve too much into what happened in the offseason, kind of gradually go over all of that. The only real major change, if it were, Brandon Boleg, of course, was probably the first cap move that Stan, and the only cap move that Stan Bowman has made so far, shaving a little bit of salary by sending Brandon Boleg, a guy he just gave a 3-year contract extension to Calgary, to get a little bit of money off the books. I think a lot of people, maybe they were wishful thinking that Stan Bowman was getting rid of that role or that position, a little getting ahead of themselves. But and then the player that the Blackhawks did sign, $2 million for 1 year, finally, you think, got their second-line center, Brad Richards. Anything else over the offseason that caught your eye, or was that specifically it?
Well, that basically it. I mean, there are a couple of ways that I thought they could go. I was of the opinion that maybe something bigger was going to happen this time for a change, which is out of character for Stan Bowman, but I thought they may make a bigger move and move out more salary, take a chance of maybe getting a player for on a 1 year type of look-see, like a Jason Spezza or something like that, and move out some salary that's going to be here like a Patrick Sharp for another couple of years after this one, and try to get a little bit bigger and, you know, get the pot right, so to speak, for the next couple of years. And there were a few players need to be paid coming up, and they'll be getting raises, and it'll be interesting to see how things work out going forward. Brad Richards, I mean, he was out there. He was a possibility. He's for $2 million isn't much risk, no doubt. The thing about that for me is, you know, Brad Richards coming off a year where he wasn't very good for the most part. how much gas is left. I don't know. I know his possession numbers, things like that, playing on the third, fourth line sometimes in New York. Will he be rejuvenated, kind of, you know, all of a sudden get more into things and a sense of relief being out of New York and kind of recapture his game a little bit like Michael Hanzus did? If so, great. Well worth the $2 million. You know, the line should produce some points, but I'll be basically on the sidelines with judgment on him until we get more into February, March. He's just coming off a long year, and he's not a spring chicken. So for me, the Hawks needed players in the playoffs. You know, they needed a shot in the arm from some young players. They didn't get that last year. They broke up the most consistent line probably they had throughout the year to try to fill other holes, that being the fourth line. With that, Brandon Bolick disappeared because he wasn't the same without Marcus Kruger and Ben Smith. So, you know, Quenneville was playing musical chairs and always seemed to be one short. We'll see if Brad Richards could stay on that line and produce throughout the year, stay healthy. And if so, that should give Joel Quenneville more options. And we could probably talk a little bit later about some of the things that I think he may have to do this year.
Blackhawks made some cuts. I mean, they're with two preseason games left, and this shouldn't be a surprise, with two preseason games left, they're pretty much down to, save for a few positions, they're carrying a couple extra defensemen right now, maybe two, possibly three extra forwards. Of course, we know that they, like I mentioned at the top, they still have some cap issues to work out. They need to shed some salary. But, I mean, they're down to almost the team that they're going to have. But they made some cuts today. Adam Clendenning, Klaus Dahlbeck, the goaltender Scott Darling, and Garrett Ross. And I know I'm missing another name. But
I think that takes down to, what, 30?
Yeah, 30 when they need to be 23, 22. But they're also carrying Ryan Hartman, who's injured. He can't be sent to Rockford until he's cleared. So, and I don't think that that's happened yet. I know he skated today, but I don't know that he's necessarily cleared. So it doesn't look like
so
Ryan
really
Hartman.
Really, 29 then.
Yeah.
You know, you don't count him as being in the mix. So they have to cut six people.
And the guys that they haven't cut yet, but I mean, I know Joe Quenneville commented today, because they weren't on the ice, but Cody Bass and PC LeBrie, Pierre Cedric LeBrie, Bass and LeBrie being two guys that were positioning themselves potentially for that enforcer role to replace Brandon Bolick. Those guys are going through waivers today, so they're off. So essentially they're down to 27.
Right,
so,
right. Those guys really, I mean, that's a look-see on two players that haven't proven to be to really, all they've proven so far is that they're professional minor league players to some extent. So the chances of either one of them making the roster, and Cody Bass, I mean, he's got a big heart, tough guy, but he takes a lot of punches, you know, and the other guy doesn't look like he could play in the NHL to me, limited time I saw him. So that leaves the guy that is the youngest of the group, who's still unproven, probably Mashinter, to take that spot if they're going to have a spot like that, which by all signs seems to be the case.
Friday night you got to see the Blackhawks in person. Anybody, even of the guys that have been sent down, because I've got some thoughts on some of the guys that were sent down, but anybody stand out? I mean, the Blackhawks on Friday night didn't really look interested in playing the New York Rangers. There were a few guys, and maybe you're about to mention them, but anybody stand out to you of who you saw there in person on Friday night at the United Center?
Well, Philip Deneau by far was the best player on the ice for the Blackhawks, I thought. And the young goaltender was pretty good too. I mean, and he was evidently pretty good once again in Edmonton, Darling. They may have gotten lucky with him. You know, his numbers limited basis in Milwaukee were pretty good, and it's always a crapshoot with a goaltender, but they may have snagged someone that could be, you know, a professional goaltender in the NHL in the future for nothing, basically. And Matt Carey does a lot of flying around. Jury's still out with me on, you know, where he fits in where his, you know, where his upside goes, but he's noticeable. I mean, the thing about preseason hockey is that, you know, you get a mishmash of people, of players out there, and, you know, the Hawks need the worker bees. They're not the same team without Kruger and Shaw out there, and they weren't playing. And, you know, some of the kids that impress, they're hustling. They're out going to give it 110%, like a Deneau. And, you know, they're making some things happen. The Hawks really didn't get to the net till well into the second period. And Corey Crawford, not real sharp, although, you know, deflection, screens. My God, Cam Barker, just wow. You know, if I was thinking that maybe Cam Barker could make his way to Rockford and maybe he, you know, would have some sort of a positive influence. But, I mean, if you put him down there with Johns for the year, your head's really going to be spinning. You're going to want to pull your hair out because if they play anything like they did together the other night, and then, you know, and I'm not going to hang out Johns at all because, I mean, he's watching the puck a little bit too much sometimes too, but, I mean, just, you know, put in a bad position. You know, and he may very well be a good NHL player in time to come. That time isn't now, but he has some lessons to learn, and putting him with Cam Barker, you know, really wasn't helping him at all. So, you know, I think the problem down there, and we've talked about this in the past, is that it would be nice to have some players who were legit NHL players who could help these younger kids instead of, you know, putting them with, you know, the players they've had down there the last couple of years who, for the most part, have no chance of playing in the NHL again and weren't much when they were there. And I don't know how much of a guiding influence they've been. It would be nice to have a little bit of a blend down there because I think by design, they, you know, the Hawks would love that team to make the playoffs, get these guys some experience in the postseason, get them a winning attitude because, you know, they have a handful of players down there that look like they could be NHL players someday. And, you know, how they struggle through the season and keep the morale up, they seem to, you know, suffer some losing streaks and they have their spurts, but for the most part, you know, it hasn't really been a fun way to go down there. Not a lot of success with points. So, I mean, by design, you'd like to get that winning influence to rub off down there and then be able to call some of those players up if you need them later in the year or maybe even in the playoffs to, you know, a little spark here or there instead of, you know, Quenneville really is afraid to use any of those guys because he doesn't use them during the year, which is something else that may have to change at some point here. You know, the gap of talent, the difference between the Blackhawks and everybody else in their division in the conference, you know, it's not what it was 4 years ago. They have to be dialed on high to win, and they may still have the best team from top to bottom, but the gap is closed, and, you know, you need that influence of those younger guys that could come in and play some quality minutes and be pleasant surprises. And really, you know, they've had a couple throughout the last few years, but for the most part, they haven't had a lot of that. And Quenneville may have to look to, you know, not have his foot down on the pedal all year as much if he could and try to get some of these other kids in the mix. But I think from the very start of last year, he knew he was going to be in a tough battle throughout. The Hawks never really were in control in any regard of the division. And, you know, he understands that, you know, he's paid to win and he wants to win. And his best case to win is not with on-the-job training, so to speak. But at some point, you know, that has to be part of the mix here.
There are a couple points I think do need to be made, though. And I'm not trying to take anything away from the way that Deneau or Carey or some of these guys, Dennis Rasmussen, have performed. But Deneau and Carey in particular were two guys, and Rasmussen too, that, I mean, their season started many weeks ago in that they were guys that participated in the annual, you know, kind of pre-camp conditioning week over in Sweden with Barry Smith. Carey and Deneau were. And then, you know, they come back to the States, and then they play in the rookie tournament. And so they have that rookie tournament. So they have, like, they're almost like in second or third week of October form already. And they're playing against a bunch of guys that are just looking to get their feet going. So
yep. That's, you know, very true. That's a good point. That's why it's very difficult to make any assessments. Like we were talking earlier, the guys that look the best are the guys they sent down. you know, but what does that mean? They're not ready to play. I don't want to say they're ready to play in the NHL now. Maybe at some point this year for a little bit. I think Danault is going to be an NHL player and a pretty good one. I don't know when, and I don't know if it's here, but he looks to me like he has the vision and has another gear and is pretty strong in his skates. He looks like he could be a player. But, you know, Rasmussen is another guy. You know, he looks better than a lot of them too, but I mean, you know, you're not comparing apples to apples because he's a polished guy. He's played against men for a while. And, you know, so it's very difficult to distinguish, you know, performances at times in the preseason. And you bring up a good point. And really, like I say, with the way he's split up the squads, you know, the top line in Saskatoon, what was it last night? Versteeg, Bickle, and Shaw? You know, that was I listened to a little bit of the game. That's what the announcer said for, you know, on the Edmonton side. And, you know, so obviously you're seeing two teams made up completely differently. You know, when you're having third and fourth line players, or third line players, give them a little bit more benefit of the doubt, you know, as your top line. So, you know, I don't know what you gain from preseason as far as judging things, but they'll have time to practice after Wednesday. And, you know, they need to. The power play looks like it did, you know, for much of last year. It didn't look like much. But so we'll have to see. And the interesting thing will be where does Stan Bowman go to, you know, make the pot right with the cap? And what's he going to do? Is he going to trade a defenseman? And then hopefully a guy like Dahlbeck could come through, or, you know, maybe a cheaper option even, or about the same. I don't know exactly the cap, but I think he may be a little bit less money. Kyle Kaminsky, maybe he comes in. I don't know. Either that or Michael Roosevelt goes the same path that Brent Sopel did in 2008, 2009, and all of a sudden he needs a couple of operations, and we see him in March. But if that doesn't happen, you know, Stan Bowman is going to have an interesting move or two coming up here shortly.
All right, I want to get in. Al, I'm going to give you a call right back because I don't know if people can hear this or if it's just on my end, but you're breaking up a little bit. So hopefully if we redo this connection, that'll go away.
Okay.
So let me just call you back real quick here.
No problem.
And okay. And then we're going to get in. We want Al and I, I'm going to try to talk us through here as I call Al back. But Al and I are going to get into some Stan Bowman discussion. I know Al wants to go to delve into a little bit of the risky topic of advanced analytics, and we're going to give him a call back here right now, and hopefully that'll go away. I don't know if I was just hearing it or if it's a big problem. Hopefully
Hello?
That'll go away. All right, Al.
Is this
hopefully
better?
That fixed it.
All right.
We'll see. We'll see. I think hopefully I'm just hearing that, but I mean I can hear you, and you know I can make out what you're saying, but it's a little choppy in parts, but hopefully that'll go away. Okay, I do want to talk about, because, you know, here we are, what are we now, 9 days before the start of the regular season, and Stan Bowman, I guess his rationale this whole time, and I don't know that I necessarily can criticize it because, you know, I mean, this is a training camp where he had some decisions to make. He's got a player and, you know, a guy like Jeremy Morin, who it's now or never for Jeremy Morin. There should be no going back to Rockford. Of course, he'd have to clear waivers to get to Rockford, but there's no point in Jeremy Morin spending any more time in the system if he's not ready to be a Blackhawk right now. And so he's got that decision to make. He's got a decision to make about whether or not he's going to roll the dice for another season with Chris Versteeg. He's got guys on the back line that, you know, does he shed old salary, like older player salary, like Michael Roosevelt, or does he move a guy like Nick Leddy, who can bring a good return before it, you know, he gets into a mess, you know, with contracts that he's going to have to redo next year, Saad and Leddy in particular. But he's chosen to kind of back himself into this corner now, Al, where other GMs, should they choose, could back him into a corner and basically dictate to Stan Bowman he moves. And that's risky business for Stan Bowman. And I guess my question to you, Al, is this how you would have handled it? Because I think if this I don't know about the long-term Nick Leddy. I'm not sure that long-term Nick Leddy is better than, you know, what may be coming up through the pipeline. But for this year, in which you want to win a Stanley Cup, and it's I mean the pressure's on to win this thing now because things are going to change after this year. For this year, I want Nick Leddy on the team. So if he gets back in the corner and that's the guy he moves, there's going to be some people pretty upset.
Well, let me start at the top, and hopefully I'm not breaking up as much, but it's hard to criticize Stan Bowman from the standpoint that he really hasn't made a lot of big mistakes, and even when he makes a mistake, as all GMs will, he offsets it by, you know, a good find or a move that turns out to be better than it looked when the trade took place or the acquisition took place. By all hockey logic, it makes little sense to trade Nick Leddy now, unless there's part of some prearranged deal that's going to come to fruition where there's someone else off the roster that's going to move, and, you know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense because Nick Leddy just turned 23. Now, obviously, the head coach has a problem with Nick Leddy in the playoffs. It's not coincidence that he doesn't play as much, especially in the later rounds against the better teams, because he doesn't handle the forecheck as well as the coach wants him to. That has to be the reason. Now, I wouldn't hang out Nick Leddy at 23 for that necessarily, playing on one of the top teams. But if the head coach doesn't have confidence in him, if he's not going to find his way into the top four, then I would have traded him at the draft. Because the way I look at it, he's the most valuable, feasible trade chip that the Blackhawks have. Now, I do believe Patrick Sharp was offered around. You know, same way Dave Bolin was offered around until Quenneville got back into the saddle and things worked out the year before they won the Cup again. And it was a good thing, I guess, that Bolin wasn't traded. But then right away, after the Cup, he was. So I think there was... I think they entertained the idea about dealing Sharp, but I would have thought that Oduya or Leddy would have been gone. Oduya's risky. He's never played better hockey than he has now. His body of work here is far better than anything he's ever done anywhere else. Maybe that's because of Hjalmarsson. Maybe it's because the style of the team fits him. Whatever the reason, he's a legitimate top four player here on a very good team. And if you look back, he really didn't establish himself as that anyplace else. So you have him coming up as a UFA. What would you be able to get for him now? Can't take back much salary. So now he's in a position, Bowman being in a position, that unless you're going to make a bigger deal and move three players to get one back and some prospects, one decent player back who makes some money, and those trades, for the most part, they don't happen now. I mean, I can't remember the last time there was a, you know, kind of a head-turning trade or a decent trade of legitimate roster players that would fit into most teams, you know, a week or so before the regular season. I can't remember that happening. And, you know, now you're looking at a case where a scenario where Michael Roosevelt, you may have to give to trade him away. You know, I'll be the first to say they won the Cup in 2013, largely because Michael Roosevelt. They played with five defensemen. He recaptured what he was years earlier. I mean, and he was a, you know, he was a high-paid UFA at one time, and he looked every bit the part when he came in and played in the 13 playoffs. And you know, a lot of the reason why they won was because they were able to go to him consistently. But last year, he never could recapture that. Same thing with Hanzus. So, I mean, now to trade him at $2.2 million, you got to call in a marker from someone because, you know, what are you going to get for him? And I think right now, maybe that would be the first choice because, as you say, if you're looking to gear it up, and they are, to win the Cup this year, when you look at it on paper, he's probably the one that you could most afford to lose who's making over $2 million. But once again, you know, you may have to throw in someone in there with him that's maybe a Jeremy Morin at only $800,000 a year that could go to another team and possibly play, you know, at least top 9 minutes, maybe even top 6 minutes, depending on where he goes, and would be attractive at $800,000. But once again, you'd have to look at a team that's willing to take in $3 million worth of salary and give you a useful player back or someone halfway decent back, you know, to either be part of the roster here or hopefully not have to spend too much time in roster. Or maybe you just in Rockford, maybe you just forsakes that and says, hey, you know, I get rid of $3 million in salary. I'll trade those two players for a pick. You know, but you, once again, you have to find someone that could absorb $3 million worth of salary and two roster spots this late in the game. It's not easy.
I mean, I think the, you know, it's real easy just to say, well, you know, let's you take Verskeeg and Rosenthal off the team and there, your problem's solved. But, you know, it's not going to be that easy, I don't think, for Stan Bowman. And, you know, bring up Jeremy Morin. There's a couple things to point out about Morin right now. You know, the Blackhawks have played four exhibition games, and the only player that's played in all four exhibition games has been Jeremy Morin. What does that tell you? That tells you that they're not convinced, and they've got him under the microscope. And if at this stage of the game you still haven't convinced them, and you're still under the microscope, that's a problem. You know, and I think for Morin as well, there's only one spot for him to play on this team, and that's third line right wing. I mean,
and that's the biggest problem.
And
right.
Yeah, and you know, he'd be better off on the left wing, to tell you the truth, Jeremy Morin would, but Bickle plays the left wing. And Saad and Sharp play the left wing. I don't think Jeremy Morin's taking any one of those spots. So, and he's not taking the top two right wing spots. So it's third line. Morin's not going to play fourth line. So he's got one spot on the team he can play. So it's a situation of, and he's not, I mean, if, and I wrote about this before, even if he doesn't fit into that top 12 on opening night, and he's not, you know, added into a deal, I think he still makes the team just because I don't think that they want to just put him on waivers and lose him. There's been a lot of guys put on waivers in the past week, and I don't think any of them have been cleared. Nobody of note anyway. But that's going to change. You know, there's going to be a couple of guys that are going to get plucked off here as teams really round out their rosters and understand what they need. And there are bottom 15 teams all over the league that know Jeremy Morin's pedigree. They know what he's, you know, his potential, and they say, you know what, for 2 years and that money, we'll take him. So
Paul, he'll get claimed. He'll get claimed.
And, you know,
yeah,
you
I
can't
agree.
Be Stan Bowman. You can't be Stan Bowman who lost Ryan Stanton. I mean, Mike Koska is not a big loss, but you lose him through waivers. You lose Kevin Hayes for essentially nothing to this point. You get a compensatory draft pick, but that you lost him. You know, he's a guy possibly on the verge of being an NHL player, and you lost him for nothing. You can't lose Jeremy Morin for nothing. So he'll be on the team, but he won't have a spot unless he gets dealt. And that's the problem for Morin. Morin, he hasn't convinced anybody yet. Everybody's hopeful. I think everybody's rooting for him, but he hasn't convinced anybody yet. And, you know, Joel seems to be, you know, there was a sparkle in Joel's eye last night when he was talking about Chris Verskeeg. Joel's not going to make the final call, but that's not helping Morin either. And the fact that Morin really hasn't done anything of note in these four preseason games, and I don't know that he's going to get in on Wednesday night. So his back is against the wall here.
Well, you bring up some good points, and I mean, Verskeeg, as much wrath as he's gotten, and deservedly so in a lot of respects, since he's been back, you can't compare the versatility part. I mean, he could play on any line if need be. You know, how good, it matters which side of the bed he gets out of, but also, maybe, you know, for $2.2 million, you probably need to maybe take a breath with him and say, And he there was a good quote the other day or a week or so ago about, and I think he commented, and he didn't make excuses. He just said there's a big difference between having a summer of rehab and a summer of training. And now we'll see. I mean, I thought it was a great deal when they got him on paper. You know, for that money, it made all the sense in the world. Sometimes things that look too good to be true just aren't. But, you know, is Stan Bowman, who was in his corner, and I think out of everyone that I've ever seen here, I don't know if anyone has gotten more rope than Chris Versteeg with Joel Quenneville. So, you know, going back to 2010, and remember, as he ended up, the guy that would cough the puck up at either blue line, who, you know, wasn't real focused a lot of times, he was the checking line. He was on the third line, and it was the best third line in hockey, as it turned out. So I think he's going to get the benefit of the doubt. You bring up a very valid point about Jeremy Morin, and I think it cannot be overlooked. It's different, but not that much different than Brandon Perry. The only player that has come up here since Joel Quenneville has been the coach from Rockford that basically is a one-line player and who made somewhat of a mark for a while was Brandon Bolick. As soon as the salary cap was announced and it wasn't as high as, you know, the front office thought, they looked down the roster, they saw Brandon Bolick, who wasn't the same without Kruger and Smith. And those players, I don't think they could afford to have them as fourth-line players as it stands right now. He made the deal and right away didn't hesitate and got rid of Brandon Bolick. Jeremy Morin is pretty much the same as Bolick, as Perry. He's a one-line player, one-position player for the most part. At least that's the way he's thought of. And it's very difficult to make this team if that is basically your skill set or thought to be your skill set. Everyone else, Brandon Saad, Ben Smith, Andrew Shaw, those players up and down, fourth line, third line, second line, first line sometimes, back and forth. But, you know, and I think that's what Joel Quenneville, that's what he looks for. And it will be interesting to see how this roster rounds itself out. And what's going to happen, you know, Nordstrom was a guy that Quenneville seemed to have a sparkle in his eye for last year. And now he's, you know, he's down. So it seems like they're going to save a spot for Mashinter. I can't see anybody else if they're going to go with that type of player. They don't really have anybody else. So who does, you know, that doesn't leave much room for anyone else, as you said. Unless there is something in the works that's more than just one player going as a salary dump, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at it and say, well, okay, with it, Blackhawks can trade Nick Leddy. Well, yeah, they can trade Nick Leddy, but what kind of deal are you trading Nick Leddy and getting back proper value if you're not taking on any salary? So that's a tough thing to do. You know,
there's no proper value anymore, I don't think, unless it's part of a bigger deal. And like I say, that doesn't usually happen now. I mean, Nick Leddy, to me, I think you would have had a line, you know, around the block and back, you know, at the draft to take a shot with him. You know, you look at you know, what he's put up. I mean, and granted, I mean, he has some defensive liabilities, but at 23, you know, he's not done progressing in that regard, especially for a defenseman. And, you know, you look at the points he's put up on kind of a limited role. You know, I would think that he would have been a guy that would have garnered some attention for sure. But now, where are you going? You know, so it's very interesting. I mean, he, like you say, with hesitation, I would say that Stan Bowman's painted himself into a corner. But we don't know what else might be in the works. You know, but certainly it seems to me that if you wanted to trade a young 23-year-old defenseman who's played decent minutes on a very good team since basically, you know, two steps out of his limited college career, the time to do it was at the draft, not, you know, a week before the season starts. And I think you bring up the point, too, if you're looking to really go into this season guns a-blazing, and the way I look at the schedule, it would be good to come out gate pretty fast because that first 6 weeks or so, not so tough, especially the first month, but not so tough the first 6 weeks. You know, you'd want to get out and start establishing yourself and, you know, play some winning hockey. Who's going to take Nicoletti's place? It's not Dahlbeck. I mean, you know, it's not Kyle Kaminsky, I don't think, either. I mean, you know, I don't think those players compare to him at this point. So it remains to be seen, but it certainly appears to be a very touchy situation.
Al, before we, I want to get to, you brought something up that I want to, we're going to get to in just a little bit, but you mentioned getting out of the gate early, and we're going to get to that in just a second, but real quick, you know, we kind of glazed over a bit Brad Richards in that second line center, and now the Blackhawks having a proper, you know, centerman. We, you know, it's still, to me, Brad Richards on that line is a weird fit, because after the faceoff, the guy who has the puck is Patrick Kane. And to me, that's one of the reasons why it really, how fast the second line center, Patrick Kane center is kind of secondary to me. You know, of course he's got to be able to keep up, and that's why Michael Hanzus was a square peg in a round hole. But, and Brad Richards can certainly keep up, but that center has got to be a guy who can play a 200-foot game, who can go into the corners on Patrick Kane's side of the ice, because you don't want Brandon Saad coming over all the time and having to do the dirty work. It's still an odd fit, Brad Richards is. I think Brad Richards' best contribution to this team, to me, if it works out this way, would be working the point on the second power play, perhaps the first, but, I mean, definitely one of those power plays. That's where I think he's going to be best suited. Certainly with sustained zone pressure, Richards and Kane should do very well together. But to me, like, that's the thing to look at. I mean, I brought this point up, on a couple of podcast or radio show interviews that I did, but you know, in Brad Richards' time in New York, and it should also be noted that Brad Richards, talking to people in New York, he didn't want to leave there. You know, he was quite comfortable in New York, but, I mean, it wasn't his decision. But Brad Richards' common line mates in New York were Ryan Callahan and Carl Hagelin. He didn't play with Marian Gaborik, and he didn't play with Rick Nash. So I think when we look at his production in New York and what he did in New York, I think, you know, until Marty St. Louis came at the end of last year and was reunited with Brad Richards, like, he didn't have a top-end winger that he played with. And all due respect to Ryan Callahan, he's a role player, he's a good player to have, but he doesn't have the skill of Brandon Saad when Brandon Saad's clicking, and none of those players are anywhere near Patrick Kane, you know, and probably, you know, I mean, Marian Gaborik probably included. So, like, you got to take that. What are your expectations for that line? Do you think that line's together all year long? And what kind of numbers are you looking for out of Patrick Kane now that he has what you think is a competent second-line center?
Well, you touched on a couple different points, and you kind of you brought up kind of the negative and then maybe a positive for Brad Richards in that he gets enhanced line mates. I guess what I would say, what I'm wondering is, I mean, he pretty much got what he deserved in New York. He didn't prove to be, you know, that elite center, that scoring center. Can he still be? I don't know. I'm not going to say he can't be. Does he have that spot nailed down for the entire year? I would say definitely not. Definitely not. You know, because I think you brought up some points. You're going to have to be able to be defensively responsible, and his numbers were pretty bad last year. You know, and I'm not going to sit here and slice and dice him from the standpoint that I didn't watch him much. I don't know who he was with most of the time. I mean, I know who he was with most of the time in some respects, but not who he was playing against and stuff. But he almost seems like he should bounce, so to speak, because they weren't very good. I thought your comment about the power play was dead on. To me, that's the first thing that I thought of. The second thing I thought of, beside being, you know, a center for Kane, was the fact that he should enhance the power play. I'm not a big Patrick Sharp fan on the point at all. I mean, I don't know if it's just me, but I can't remember many times, if at all, where he sends, you know, a shot through traffic that goes in the net from the point. I mean, on a power play, I don't think he belongs there. So I think that could be a role for Richards, depending. But like I say, it's going to see have to see how he shakes out, if he's defensively responsible. It's a taxing position to play, and it certainly is that way when the player with the puck's deep in the zone and you're going to have to come back first, you know, for the most part. And Brandon Saad, I mean, at some point he can't do all the heavy lifting, as you said. So it's going to be interesting to see how they blend together. You would think that if Patrick Kane stays healthy, he should be a point-a-game player. You would think, with the difference. But, you know, until that happens, I mean, it's still retrospect. I mean, we don't know exactly. So I understand why they took him. The money fit. It's seems like kind of low risk, a guy who does have a lot of skill, or did when he was on the top of his game. So, I mean, like I said earlier, my thinking was, you know, if you wanted to make a big splash now to try to get some money off the books and still have a chance to win the cup, you go after a player who had 1 year left on his contract, who could have been here just for this season, who gives you more size. The other thing too, that's kind of suspect, and I never thought the Hawks were too small before, and I'm not saying they are now, but everyone else is getting bigger. And they're players that can move and skate. And, you know, before, they could have got by with a couple of decent-sized players and, you know, insert them in the lineup where they wanted to, Bufflin and later Bickle, and, you know, go that route. And the Hawks' smaller players aren't afraid to go into the high-traffic areas, so they don't play bashful. And I'm not implying that at all. It's just that, you know, you could get worn out. A lot of bigger players in the division now, you know, centers too. And Andrew Shaw, God love him, you know, he's not afraid of anything. But at some point, you know, that takes its toll. Same thing with a player like Marcus Kruger, who really wasn't very effective at all in the playoffs. I mean, he's like Gumby, and, you know, he makes some of those hints on him, I wince and I'm 200 feet away. But, you know, he comes right back. He doesn't miss games. But like I say, I would have thought if you were going to take a shot, you know, trade a bigger name, trade some salary, even a couple of players, actually, you know, and get one back who could help you legitimize your second line and go in that route, and also basically not be a step backwards where you're saying you're just dumping salary to get set for the future because players need raises coming up. But it would have been a legitimate threat to help the team win another cup. I don't know how Spets is going to do, you know, now. He's never been thought of as a key guy, and I'm not so sure that, you know, he will embrace that role. I think that, you know, he's still that type of body with the hands that he has, whereby, you know, he could be an interesting player in Dallas, very interesting, and they could take a big step forward with someone like him, so it remains to be seen. But I guess that's a long-winded comment on Brad Richards, the whole scenario. I wouldn't bet that he's there the whole year. I think Quenneville won't hesitate to do whatever he has to do to win. It's just a question, is he going to basically stick with the veterans and be reluctant to give younger players a chance to fill in for a while and not just for a game or two, but to have an extended stay and play 8-10 games in a row if they need to get some great experience to be used in the playoffs, possibly.
You brought up, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but you brought up everybody else getting bigger, and maybe that's a good way to transition into a topic of conversation last week because of Stan Bowman's place in the interview booth during that, I guess it would have been Wednesday night, Tuesday night?
It was the first game, wasn't it? The first home game.
And, you know, I was at Wrigley Field, Al, and while that game was going on, and a friend of mine who was watching the Blackhawks game at home texted me, is like, when you get home, you've got to watch this because he's, you know, and basically it was Stan Bowman talking about the enforcer position on the Chicago Blackhawks. And, you know, for a long time, you know, and I've known differently, but for a long time, a lot of people have pointed a finger at Joe Quenneville for the existence of that that 12th forward spot and his usage of a player like Brandon Bolig in that spot. And, you know, of course, over time, we know that Stan Bowman has signed a lot of players that have fit or he has thought would fit that role, whether it was John Scott signing and then re-signing Dan Carcillo, of course, re-signing Brandon Bolig. All the evidence was there, if you wanted to see it, that Stan Bowman was completely on board. But this week or last week, he came out and went on record saying that that's an element that he and the organization likes to see there. And, of course, that has led now to the last man standing with, as we mentioned, Bass and Labrie were put on waivers for the purpose of sending to Rockford. Mashinter looks like he's going to fit into that 12th forward spot. Obviously, I don't think he would play every game. I guess that would it would entirely depend on his performance, his level of play, and how that fourth line clicks. If it clicks through the regular season like Bolig did with Kruger and Smith, then it'll probably play every night. If not, Mashinter will be in and out of the lineup, and I think that's why they re-signed Peter Regan. Peter Regan's a guy that, I mean, he won't – Peter Regan's not going to have a problem with playing 35, 40 games, whereas why would you carry a guy like Jarrett getting back to Jeremy Morin? Why would you carry Jeremy Morin to play him 35, 40 games? You're not. And Jeremy Morin wouldn't be happy doing it either. So that's another reason why I think, you know, hope wherever Morin winds up, I hope the best for him. If he winds up somewhere else, I'll be following and I'll, you know, watching his progress, and I hope he makes it. But this just isn't looking good for him. You know, getting back to the enforcer thing, I think a lot of this hostility and anger is misguided, like it was at Brandon Bolig. You know, Brandon Bolig as a guy might be a bit of a doofus, but I mean, as a 12th forward, he was a 12th forward. And is he the worst player on the Chicago Blackhawks? Sure he was. But that's not – I mean, that's elementary school analysis. You know, tell me something else. You know, if they like the element, they like the element. And what's your quarrel? If you have a quarrel with that, your quarrel is with fighting is still valid and legal in hockey. And as long as, you know, part of Stan Bowman's general – you know, I don't have a problem either way with him carrying it or not carrying it, but part of Stan Bowman's job as a general manager is to provide the coaching staff and all of the players with all the tools that they need. And if he doesn't carry a Brandon Mashinter or a Bolig type, and in game 32, something happens and Brent Seabrook or Patrick Sharp have to drop their gloves and fight somebody, and they break their hand or they dislocate their shoulder and they're out 2, 3, 4 months, what is everybody going to be screaming about? So, I mean, in my opinion, it has to be there because you have to provide your coaching staff with all the tools. Now, does Joel need to use the guy every night? No, he doesn't. But I think the guy has to be there.
Well, I mean, To think that they wouldn't do that would be, you know, a break from the norm, so to speak. I mean, people in Chicago endured one of the worst hockey players at the NHL level that I've ever seen. No, I'll say it this way. The worst hockey player at the NHL level who had an extended stay in the league is John Scott. He's got another job. What Doug Wilson is thinking about, I have no clue. But I mean, the difference between Brandon Bolig and Doug Wilson is, you know, the difference between an ECHL player and, you know, someone who's going to play in the NHL for 10 years. There is night and day difference. So, fact is, you know, it is what it is in that regard. I think that they can't afford to have someone who's one-dimensional play that often, you know, or play the majority of the games, but I mean, they don't want Andrew Shaw fighting anyone. I mean, you know, and they don't want Brent Seabrook fighting anyone because he's off the ice for 5, 7, 10 minutes. That doesn't work to your advantage. So, you know, pretty much I find it interesting, and it's almost humorous, is over the years, there's people that dislike everything about Joel Quenneville pretty much. And there's other people who dislike almost everything about Stan Bowman. But there's seldom people that dislike both. You know, and with the team, with the way the team is done and how good they've been, that should be no shock. But, you know, and the people that are Quenneville haters, they're consistent Quenneville haters. Doesn't matter how many cups he wins. So, you know, and they're gonna keep beating that drum. The fact is this, and I would keep it simple. It's been this way forever, and it's still this way. And we could talk about, you know, more of a group effort with decision makings and everything else, which is the Blackhawks maybe one of the first front offices to be thought of seriously in that regard, at least the first front office that found a lot of success being thought of as more of a group effort. But keep it simple. The GM supplies the roster. The head coach utilizes the roster. That's it. If the GM thinks the head coach is misusing a player, using him too much, for example, what alternative does the GM have? He trades him. John Scott, you know, the lovable mascot, he disappeared. How many people saw that coming? He disappeared, and what did he go for, a fourth-round pick or something to the Rangers, who, you know, figured they needed someone, you know, to battle when they were going to battle against those Eastern Conference teams and teams in their division? He disappeared. Gone here today, gone tomorrow. Caught him by off guard, didn't know what to say. A guy who never, you know, hesitates to seek out a camera or a microphone, didn't know what to say. Caught him completely by surprise. Well, Stan Bowman wanted to make sure that John Scott wasn't getting any minutes. So he got rid of him. It's been true like that for years and years in hockey. That's the way a GM could shape his roster once the season starts. And especially when you're dealing with, you know, the 22nd, 23rd man on the roster, there's no hesitation to get rid of those players. And there's no fight about it either. So Joe Quenneville has both hands on the steering wheel here. He has more input than probably most coaches throughout the league, maybe notwithstanding, you know, Mike Babcock. But certainly, you know, he's right up there in the team photo when it comes to being part of decisions and being thought of as, you know, as the guy in charge. That said, Stan Bowman still has the ability to shape the roster. So if you keep those lines of distinction clear, I think that helps, you know, with some of the malcontents either on one side or the other. Yeah, I mean, it makes, if you're looking at it from a talent standpoint, I mean, I'd rather see a Nordstrom up here or, you know, a Jeremy Morin or even a Peter Regan, rather than having Mashiner. But that's not the way it's going to be. And he's just another part of a total machine that they think is necessary. And could they have gotten a better player to fill that role? Well, you know, you can't have everything. And with the way the money is now with the cap, you know, they're going to look to try to find a pleasant surprise with him. He's never proven to be an NHL player before. And same could be said with the two guys they put on waivers today. So they're looking to catch a little lightning in the bottle, hopefully that he doesn't, you know, expose himself being a defensive liability when he is out there. And if he doesn't do that, you know, he'll get his share of ice time. Quenneville will probably go with him and use him.
All right, Al, we only got a few minutes here before we go. I want to, and I know you wanted to talk about this a little bit too, but we talked before about getting off to a good start, the Blackhawks. You know, I go back to last year, and, you know, the Blackhawks themselves had a terrific year, but because of the way the West is and how great some of those teams atop the West is, and, you know, the Kings are going to be the Kings, but the Ducks got better, and there's some guys, you know, some teams in the middle of the pack that got better as well. Just how important it's going to be this year to Joe Quenneville is how he manages the grind. And, you know, he'll manage the grind in a lot of different ways. I'm sure a lot of the veterans are going to get a lot of time off, a lot of practices off. I'm sure practices will be shorter, more concise, even ever than before. But, you know, one of the things, and I know that you want to talk about this too, but it's how Joe Quenneville utilizes and manages young, you know, using young players. And to me, that's the biggest question mark going into this year, because how willing is Joe Quenneville going to be to trust young players when he is going to need them. If he has an injury and he has to bring up a guy like Joakim Nordstrom, or he has a fourth line that's, you know, at least he's got, you know, two, let's say he's got two guys up from Rockford, how much does he use those players? Because Joel Quenneville's going to know the importance of points, you know, getting points on a night-in, night-out basis. You know, you can't go three games and only get 1 point. It's just, you're not going to win the conference that way, right? So I look at game in, game out, how does he manage that? And the biggest thing that I'm concerned about, and I see it already, and who are the players that are still here, you know, this Kyle Komisky. Like, you know, the Blackhawks, it's like they don't and this is a criticism of Stan Bowman. It's like you don't even learn from your recent history. You know, you got a guy that just walked out of the organization on you because he didn't believe he had a chance to make it. And he felt like he'd be buried in Rockford, whether it was right or wrong. He felt like he was going to be buried in Rockford and held back and held down, you know, and what a lot of people think is because of that negotiation over that second contract. And, you know, he sent guys that are better players than Kyle Komisky and potentially a lot better players than Kyle Komisky. He sent them down. Did he send them down because he didn't believe Joel Quenneville would play him enough? And or did he send him down because he was trying to manage the second contract? And to me, the biggest thing I see this season is the Blackhawks have to be able, Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville, have to be able to take some of these young kids, two of them, definitely one, whether it's Morin, whether it's Dahlbeck, whether it's Clendenning, whether it's Johns, whomever, they've got to be able to turn a couple of these prospects that you figured at least start in Rockford and turn them into proven performers come playoff time. Because, in my opinion, they're not going to win if they don't do that. If Joel Quenneville, because he knows the importance of gaining points every night, and he looks at how important it is to not be in that position where in the first round of the playoffs you're down 2-0 to the St. Louis Blues, when you had such a great season, but you ended up in a bad spot because you just needed a couple of more points, right? When Joel Quenneville knows that, and that's in the back of his mind, he's riding these vets because he knows that he needs these points. And he's not, if that happens and he's not utilizing the young guys, when they get to the playoffs, they're going to be spent. And to me, that's of everything. That's the most important thing that I see this season, is using these young guys and instilling confidence in these young guys and doing it from the very onset. And that's why it really disturbs me that if there's a guy like a retread, like Kyle Komisky, still on, you know, vying for a spot on this roster, when you could put a guy like Dahlbeck in. Or, you know, I mean, Steven Johns needs work, but, to me, that's a big deal. You know, you look at the way the Kings went about it. You know, I mean, Daryl Sutter, you know, put these guys in and let them play. And by the time the playoffs came around, they were proven performers. And he could roll them out there and not be worried about it. And they have to be able to do that. And to me, that's not just a Joel Quenneville thing. That's a Stan Bowman thing and a pattern that this organization has shown over and over and over again in the last 3-4 years of overthinking everything they do with their prospects.
Well, you're more in tune to the prospects than just about anyone as far as being able to see them and watch their development and also, you know, measure the look on their face when they kind of hit the wall and they know that there's really nothing to play for and they're not able to move up, you know. That's why I made some comments earlier by design. Be nice if they could get into the playoffs and do some winning. But, you know, to your point, I think Quenneville has to change somewhat, and maybe the organization in itself has to change somewhat too. I don't think there's a coach in hockey who manages the regular season to get to the playoffs as well as Daryl Sutter, except for Mike Babcock. I don't think Daryl Sutter cares if he finishes, you know, third in the conference or seventh in the conference. I think he just wants to have everything going when they get to the playoffs, and that's what they've proven. To your point, now, when you win two cups in 5 years, it's very difficult to really have any strong criticism from the standpoint that, you know, the other side of it is look at the results. Anaheim Ducks, 8 or 9 players, I believe, in last year's playoffs that played in Norfolk either last year or the season before. 8 or 9 players that played in the playoffs that played in Norfolk the past 2 seasons. Now, what has Anaheim won? Nothing. But, you know, at some point, those lessons learned pay off. Here you're riding the same horses, and they're good horses. You know, horse is an amazing animal. You know, he's an athlete. He doesn't seem to age. But no one's going to tell me, and you can't ask players, no one's going to tell me my eyes might be getting older, but they still are pretty good. The team was tired last year. They were tired down the stretch. They got injuries. They fell into a spot that they probably didn't want to be in, but had no recourse. They couldn't hit another gear the last few weeks of the season. Going into the playoffs, they're winners. This is a team of winners at the NHL level, at different levels throughout their career. They have a tremendous resolve, and they find ways to win. That's the coolest thing that a fan should realize when he's watching this group, because it doesn't always happen that way. There's 1,000 ways to lose games. Last year, you know, they almost made it to the playoffs, really not playing their best hockey, and they came one bounce away, as everyone says. Well, that bounce could have happened in the St. Louis series, could have happened against Minnesota too. That's just the way the game is, but for the most part, these guys find a way to win. But at some point, there just wasn't enough gas left, and when they lost a player like Andrew Shaw, that doesn't get a lot of headlines, he made a profound difference. That one player, profound difference. They weren't the same team. They didn't have anybody else in there that could jump up. He had Quenneville wound up taking apart the line that was the most consistent, that was really his edge. The previous 2 times they won the Cup, they had the best 3rd and 4th lines in hockey. This time, not so. The team with the best 3rd and 4th line won. The team that could put out the best forecheck won again. And you need energy to do that. So your points are well taken. It's, you know, and he could give Brad Richards all the days off he wants, and he'll get a heap of them throughout this year, I would think, as will Marian Hossa, as will some of the others. But when you trot Johnny Toews out there to take how many faceoffs every night, to take important minutes all the time, to be on the penalty kill, to be on the power play, at some point, the batteries run low. You know, Patrick Kane, for as much abuse, and some of it justly so, he's taken for being a guy who, you know, might not have been in the best shape or didn't seem like or didn't take care of himself, didn't take the game seriously. Well, guess what? The amount of time that he has the puck a game, he's in unbelievable shape. I mean, his blood oxygen level, whatever they keep track of, at a stress level, he's unbelievable. To rag that puck 8, 10, 12 seconds with people on him, with players on him, he's unbelievable. But once again, at some point, you know, a little half step here or there makes a big difference. I think you saw that last year in the playoffs with Patrick Sharp. A little off. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting. The story within the story this year is how they get out of the gate, because come February, you know, it's, you look at the schedule and say, oh, wow, look at that February. They have 8 games in a row at home. You know, that seems like a real treat. To me, that's not great. You know, it's hard to stay up for 8 games in a row at home. Plus, they have other, you know, their longer road trips thrown in here also. So, like I say, just looking at the schedule, the first month, 6 weeks or so, I think you wanna come out of the gates pretty strong. But the question is, will Quenneville have his foot all the way down on the accelerator every game all year long? You know, when it's 4-1 against the New York Islanders, is Duncan Keith still playing 26 minutes, 27 minutes? You know, if that's the case, You just wonder till, you know, maybe they don't get as fortunate and don't get as far as going to the conference finals, because getting the conference finals, you certainly couldn't signify last year as being, you know, being a failure in any regard, coming off a cup win. They put themselves in position to win, but I think he's got to adapt a little bit. The organization, like you say, has to adapt a little bit. They have to see what's there with some of these younger kids and get them NHL experience, because they can't get the same type of experience, not even close, in the AHL. So it'll be an interesting year, and it's going to be an interesting, actually, 8 or 9 days here to see what exactly transpires also.
It sure will. And Al, we've well past just past the hour mark, so we're going to wrap it up there. But so we can look forward to hearing more of you on the NHL Network this season, I presume.
Yes, actually, I'll be on there probably talking about some of the same things and some other things that we've discussed tonight. I'll be on at 12:05 Central Time tomorrow.
12:05 Central tomorrow. That's I will tune into that. I'm starting to get into the groove of hockey again. I got to be quite honest. I, for many reasons, I was pretty burnt out at the end of last year, and I just totally unplugged from hockey for a couple months, and it felt really good too. So I'm trying to get caught up. I was talking to someone today. I was just like, I wish that the season was like starting in another couple, or like another 2 weeks down the line. Like, we start the season in late October. I think I'll be ready by then, but whatever we got to do, we'll get it done. I know I'm going out to Rockford on Thursday night to catch their preseason game and talk to some of these guys that have been sent down about their experiences and such. So you can look forward to that on the thirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com, and maybe post some audio and stuff like that. I've got a big getaway weekend coming up this weekend as well. And we'll be back next week. Fingers crossed this audio was okay. It was mostly okay from my end, but hopefully it was just in my ear. But, Al, I want to thank you very much, and we're going to have you back very soon. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And until then, let's see what I did here. This did not go exactly the way I was expecting. My board, anyway. Not you, Al. All right, everybody. Everybody, thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.